Howdy, y'all. Welcome back
to a fresh, hot episode of Rednecks Rising, your favorite anti-fascist, anti-capitalist, anti-racist Appalachian podcast. It is so good to be back and to be sharing energy with y'all once again. Of course, I am your host, Chelsea, and I'm so excited to be joined today by two phenomenal new co-hosts on the pod, one of whom y'all might remember from an earlier interview episode, and one who is totally new to the show, but who I think y'all are gonna love, my friends Sierra and Tiara. It's been a hot minute, and I'm really excited to be working alongside of these two stellar humans who both understand the struggle of working class parenthood and making time for changing the world in between changing diapers and keeping the light bill paid, and who hopefully can help cover more ground than I was able to do by myself when this was just a one-woman show. There's been a lot of life changes, all for the immense better in my life, but it's definitely taken me on a detour to get back into this project that is so near and dear to my heart and so important, I think, in general, to have in the world, especially as we see how narratives are leveraged to prop up the state's interest at the expense of the working class majority. In today's episode, our new friends introduce themselves, and then we formally declare this platform a full-blown conspiracy podcast as we hit on everything from AIPAC to Kate Middleton to Epstein to the Irish Prime Minister and so much in between. Influencers, Amazon, the Mind Wars, and the shit talk. There's so much shit talk. As we get into the show, please keep in mind that this is for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered journalistic reporting or legal advice in any way. If you need legal advice, please talk to a lawyer or reach out to your local legal aid organization. Don't sue us, please. We have literally nothing for you to take. Also, when we talk about FedSoc, please know that that is in reference to the Federalist Society. I actually had to ask what that was about after the show. So we're going to talk about that more in depth on another episode. We just did not have any more time in today's episode because it's already 2 hours long, as you might have noticed. Also, we do cuss a lot. So if you're at work or you're around kids, you might want to put on headphones, maybe. And we do touch on a few sensitive topics in the show, including state suppression with gun violence and the genocide in Palestine. We really want to hear from you. We want to hear your feedback on the episode. We want to hear your stories. Join us on the show. Reach out to us on social media or via email. You can find all of those links on our Linktree, which will be included in the show notes, but it's Linktree/RedneckRising. All right, I think that wraps up my housekeeping notes for now. Let's get into the show.
Like, all of those people were like my closest people. And not that I didn't have Native friends prior to that, because I did. I had Native friends all through college. Like, most of my friends were Indigenous. And a lot were Navajo. And they still live on Navajo Nation. And it's like, I feel like because my closest connections came in law school, that I was in an echo chamber. Like, I was in an echo chamber of Indigenous people that think the same, right? That see the struggle and understand that this is universal and we need to fix it, and that we can't get rid of it unless we fix it for everybody. Like, fixing it for one group doesn't mean that we fixed it, you know? And I don't know why, I just, because I don't live on a reservation and I haven't lived on a reservation, like, I wasn't close enough to know that that wasn't the common consensus. And to me, someone whose entire Indigenous history was erased, it's like, how can this not? Like, we're watching entire families be erased from existence. We did the same, like, the same thing was done to us. How can you not? How can you not? Like, how can you not? Thankfully, I will say, and end it there, my little soapbox rant, it's changed a lot. And it is now a very massive, overbearing majority of Indigenous communities are on the right side. And, like, my favorite coffee shop in Arizona and on Navajo Nation is called Skoden Coffee. Because that's a very common, you know, Skoden, like, go ahead, do what you need to do, you know, or let's fucking go, like, you know, Skoden. They actually, someone in the city of Phoenix, has pressed a defamation charge against them and a hate speech charge against them because they had a Liberate Palestine event at their coffee shop as like a fundraiser. And they were saying it was a, you know, hate speech group that they were joining together to, you know, and it's just they're raising funds now for legal aid because like they're going to have to fight this. Like the charges have been filed and all that kind of. So it's just, I wasn't wrong. It just took a minute because you're right. And that's exactly what happens in Appalachia. And that's exactly why I chose to go back to Appalachia and do the job that I do in Appalachia is because if you keep them poor and you keep them hungry and you keep them dumb, you keep them under your thumb. That's what I've always been told. And it's like, if you're not doing those things, you're risking losing the control that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story of Appalachia. That's why West Virginia has such a sweet place in my heart and always will. Because the reason West Virginia is the way it is because they've always fucking revolted. They're that ruly middle child that doesn't listen to anything and always causes a ruckus. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
They were the ones who historically were like, fuck you, fuck this, we don't fucking stand for it. And every person, every identity came together. It wasn't just white people in those minds. It was white people. It was black people. It was every other ethnicity that was in this area in whatever time we're talking about. And they all realized, holy shit, it's not about your skin color and my ethnicity. It's about the fact that our pockets are just as empty as each other's. And that unity shows us that, like, this is what we need to do. This is how we get back at it. We unite. And as soon as every fucking time they did that. Every fucking time.
That is one of, you know, Sierra, that is one of my, like, the Battle of Blair Mountain is one of my favorite stories to tell when I'm in a Palestinian setting, be it at a protest or in a group where we're just all talking about something. It is my favorite thing to talk about because along the way I tell it is a little ridiculous. But there's a point in time where I'm like, and then they said only the white guys. And they were like, fuck that shit. Get your guns, boys. We're taking the mines. And then everybody went. And I like always like hold up my bandana and like a keffiyeh. And I'm like, same thing. Right. And the first time I did that was when after Nyla had given me my keffiyeh and I explained it and I like pointed back to her and I was like, I just want you to know. And I like held up like my bandana. I was like, I want you to know, like I'm going down with you, girl. And everybody started crying. And I was like, oh fuck. Like, okay. So I went on to elaborate the importance of, and I was like, I understand you guys are peaceful people and everybody has their place in a revolution, especially ornery motherfuckers in that moment. Because Nyla's there beside me, and this was after she had a gun fucking held to her head at the like a couple protests before that. Some dude walked up, had a gun to her fucking head. He's out on bail. And her son was there, and he's like 10. And he was terrified to go to protest again. And I had said to her right before this one, I said, listen, if anything happens, let your son know. If I'm there, nothing's going to fucking happen to you. Right? So they're there. He comes over, confirms with me at the beginning of the protest, right? Nyla asked me to speak last minute, and I'm compelled to speak about solidarity. At one point in time, I talked about pipelines. And I just told you about this, Sierra, and I was, like, explaining to them, like, the concept of, like, they go out and strap themselves to fucking machinery. Mm-hmm. I bet we can get them to strap themselves to the gates of weapons factories. Like, same fucking issue.
Oh, they're doing it. Reject Raytheon. Yeah. In Asheville literally is, like, they are getting arrested for blockading the path to the Raytheon.
Yes. I think I talked about this
November or December with them. And I was like, I guarantee you, you're going to see them doing this. Like, and I gave them Facebook, like, and Instagram pages to go watch and shit. Because when I go to these things, it's mostly like in a big audience. So I'm just trying to like let them know like where to find help.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And like show them a general understanding from someone over here. But I had mentioned that. And I said the importance of it is like we're so different. And it's really important that different people show up. And the United States government knows that. Ask Fred Hampton. And so like I'm here. And I'm going to talk about the importance of us being different because we can get each other into different spaces. And then when we come together too, it's a lot scarier because it's a lot scarier when the preacher stood next to Fred. It's a lot scarier when I stand up here next to Zena. And it's a hell of a lot fucking scarier, I can promise you, whenever this is all said and done, we handle the most important issue where I know you guys, I know your hearts. And when they come over that hill one day and they see a bunch of people in keffiyehs strapped to fucking machinery, it's going to take a lot more to get the pipeline. And I swear to God, Chelsea, 200 goddamn Arabic people started screaming yes. Because that is how they operate. That is their, like, that is any anarchist or resistance organization that I know over there that I have had the privilege of speaking to, their whole thing is absolute solidarity across the board. Mm-hmm. Like, they check in with me to see, like, how my life is. Mm-hmm. And, like, pray for me in the middle of all of this because they're concerned about our issues, too, at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we can learn from them. It's like so fucking much, but I gotta swear less, I swear. But I got on my rant because we're talking about Sierra, refresh me.
Blair Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's how we got West here. Virginia. That gets them hype as hell because they didn't know. And then they go and they look into it. And I've had some people come back and be like,
well, and most people, I didn't know until I literally grew up in Appalachia, but I'm in, you know, Southern Appalachia, and they didn't teach us that shit in public school here. And so when I was actually starting this podcast, of course, like Battle of Blair Mountain was like one of the first things that I had in my queue to talk about, but I wanted to start, my flavor of neurodivergence says, but why did that happen? But why did that happen? But why did that happen? And so when I started looking into the Battle of Blair and I learned that it was like the grand finale in a series of events, I was like, oh, well, I have to go upstream. What happened mm-hmm. before that? And then I literally ended up at the fucking foundation of the United States of America as a corporation and like it and all of the shit that like it was just it was the foundation of this podcast in a way that like when I launched this initially, I knew I wanted to talk about social justice and movement spaces and history in Appalachia. But genuinely, I think even just starting this and forcing myself to like learn about all of this actually deepened my understanding of how interconnected these issues all really are. Like, I think my understanding of liberation grew just as a result of having to better understand our history as Appalachians. Like, that it literally forced me to become more anti-racist, more anti-capitalist, like, in the end. And so I think this is a great place to say, howdy, y'all. Most folks probably know my voice, but we still need to introduce you. For all of the folks listening, it's really easy to get into a conversation when there's like many of us here. This is Chelsea speaking, but I am so, so excited to introduce someone y'all have heard from before in an interview and someone you have not heard from before who I'm actually meeting face to face for the first time tonight, even though we've been in group chats together for a hot minute now. Welcome, Sierra and Tiara.
Hello.
I would love for y'all to transition us a little bit into grounding us in who you are and who is sharing these stories with us and this wisdom and all these tidbits. Maybe Sierra, I can pass it over to you since you've been on the show before. We can kind of like pick up there with, we talked to you when you were in law school still, or in a different stage of your life. So maybe pick up there, remind us who you are and a little bit about what brings you here.
Sure. My name is Sierra. I was on the podcast a while back when I was in law school. I have since graduated law school.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I took the bar, 2-3 weeks ago now. I will get my results April 19th and swear in June 4th. So since the fall, since I graduated in the summer, I have been working as a public defender here in Appalachia in southwestern Virginia, and I absolutely, the last time I was on the show, I talked about my indigenous ancestry in Appalachia, growing up in Appalachia, and then why I was staying and coming back to Appalachia. Don't mind the dog. Roxy Joe.
That's also our new podcast host, right?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I talked about all those things, and I talked about the reasons I wanted to practice criminal defense as a public defender in Appalachia, and it's better than I could have ever dreamed of. It is everything I've ever wanted to do in my life. And even as an anti-capitalist, even if this was an unpaid job, I would do it. And to be quite honest, it's not far from it. I have been struggling greatly.
Now that I've graduated, I've been acting as a public defender here in Southwestern Virginia in Appalachia since August of last year. I took the bar 2 weeks ago, so I get my results April, swear in, but I am practicing currently under my boss's license, the whole thing, legal and everything like that. that's what I've been doing, and it's everything I've ever dreamed of. Even working my ass off to get here, I had in my head what this was going to be like, and it surpasses every dream I could have thought of. I'm very anti-capitalist, but even in an anti-capitalist world, I would do this job for free every day. Forever. And I hope it stays that way.
I want to do a whole episode on why you love it so much and like public defender stuff.
I got you.
Yes. Oh, yay. Tiara, who are you? How'd you get here? What's your story?
I don't know how I got here. Sierra volunteered me. That's how I got here. And then I liked you a lot. Well, I grew up with Sierra.
Where'd y'all grow up again?
Juniata County.
Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
I knew there was an accent in there that I was like, not in you, in Tiara.
Yeah, mine's coming and going because I decided to stop hiding it like a year or two ago, yes. You know, because I read about it in a book and it really stabbed me in the heart how many of us do that when we move away. And so I've been trying to not, and so it's coming back. And then sometimes I still talk otherwise, but I can't get voice to text to work on my iPhone, not a single word. So yeah, when I go visit Sierra, it comes back real thick. Because really, Juniata is really amusing to me in that you can have people who barely have an accent, and then you can have people kind of like my family where you couldn't understand a lot of them when they talk.
Nope.
We'd need subtitles.
It's like Southern Pennsylvania Dutch. It's just a mixture of strange, strong language. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, someone called it Midwestern cursive to me before.
Yeah, that's like I'm picking up. Like it's like not. It's like a different kind of accent than what I'm used to. That's why I was like, interesting. Like it's like a Northern Appalachian accent.
Yeah, we have all those different ones. Because I'll go. And when I'm down in Virginia visiting you, I get the look.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like,
where are you from?
Yeah. 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 You seem like maybe, but I'm not sure. And then, you know, you just give them a raise hell, praise Dale, and everybody knows where you're from.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm Sierra's childhood friend. And, do not have a cool, flashy job. I'm just a small business owner. Doing handyman work.
Is the most revolutionary job that I can think. Like, it does not get more blue collar revolutionary.
My plan for my life actually revolves around that. Actually, I'm glad that you pointed that out because I have no problem saying that I am piggybacking off of this woman's accomplishments. And whenever we're doing some communal living, when she gets us all set up, I plan to utilize small businesses like that in the area to create a better, like, self-sustaining economic system within really small, remote areas of Appalachia and small towns and stuff. I believe that we can have a more self-sustaining way of living where we can very easily, because of our abilities and our resources that we have at hand, the skill sets that we have, that I'm really grateful that I left home because I didn't know what it was like outside. I didn't know how many useful life skills I had. But we can very easily step away from capitalism well before anybody else can. And we can model that, especially in a communal living kind of way. I believe we can model I'm personally an anarchist, full blown. I believe we can absolutely model communal anarchist style living to the point where we can do it on a larger scale. I want to eliminate food deserts by creating food hubs. And honestly, we need to start. We need to stop making it so taboo to be on things like EBT and things like that in small areas. We really have to stop letting them drill into their heads that make them less of a person or less of a worker or anything like that, because they qualify most of the time. And the issue is that they're qualifying. It's not that they're qualifying. It's that they're qualifying, that the resources that they're being provided with are so far out of their reach that they could all go get it, but they're being shamed out of it. So they're just doing without instead. They're not making as much as people in other locations. So get people signed up for things like that, you know, and then you get the government money pumped right back into your community. And then you can, because you utilize that, you pay farmers directly and you can create more self-sustaining things that way. There's so many different business avenues and things like that where you can bring in even money from the outside back in, because we dang well deserve it and it's ours. So my focus is more on something like that in the future. That's what I've been like getting my life experiences from working with different nonprofits. I do a lot of networking. We'll get back on topic here. Bear with me. It's the end of the day. I'm going to be everywhere. But I do a lot of really good networking. I do a lot of volunteering with other nonprofits. I did a lot of work with different organizations in 2020 and 2021 involving the protests, but also in involving addressing the issues within the houseless community. That was really my main focus during COVID, and how people are being treated and really bringing to light what it is that they were doing to, you know, the least of us, and the way in which they were presenting what they were doing, because that really got overshadowed in all of that too. And it was directly related because these people were also getting caught in the crossfires of the protests and whatnot. So I tried to do a lot of networking and getting those local organizations involved with the local houseless community, because when you do that, then who shows up at the next protest? Local houseless community. Mm-hmm. And they actually have a union rep who came out one time with like signs and stuff. And that to me, community building is my focus. And so otherwise I'm essentially a stay-at-home mom.
Oh yeah, I guess I forgot that too. I'm a single mom of three.
Oh yeah, those kids.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be called work from home?
I have the cool fun job that I get to love. No, I have to come home and raise three very uniquely amazing children.
They are wonderful, and I love my nephews and niece so much.
And how many, Tiara, do you have?
I have four.
And I have one. So for anyone listening out there, locking in a time to record together successfully between the three people that you're hearing right now probably took us
a long time. Months?
Like 6 months.
That's also why my brain is mush. I can't do this by the end of the day. I'm mush and I answer too many brilliant, brilliant, not stupid questions all day.
Oh, man. But we're piloting, experimenting with, testing out, having y'all join as co-hosts on the podcast. So I'm just so excited when you're talking about the houseless community, Tiara. I have stories of bringing the houseless community into advocacy as well for Medicaid expansion in my situation. And just, I think we are going to have so many great stories and tangents and soapboxes to go on together. And I want to give a little bit of a disclaimer to the listeners that this is going to be new for all of us. Like, I've never had a co-host before. Y'all have, I think, never had a podcast before. So we'll be figuring out a new flow and totally open to feedback and input. And of course, we're going to be wanting to interview folks. So if you're hearing this and you want to sit down for an interview, this will make it where we can have more options for folks to interview people. So our schedules can match with interview guests a little bit easier. We can maybe feature some new folks on the show. But yeah, I just wanted to let everyone know that you're listening to three folks who are raising humans, working or running small businesses, and which is also working and trying to exist and coming together to talk about the fire that burns inside of all of us, because it's still going to keep burning whether we talk about it or not, but we might as well share it with each other so that maybe we can help guide it towards a better future. It can burn down what needs to be burned and shed light on what needs to be seen. So yeah, welcome. I didn't have an agenda for this episode. So is there anything in particular that you think is important to set the stage for anyone who might be listening to this about what they can expect?
Well, this podcast, I know it's Redneck Rising, not Appalachia, but you know, we're all Appalachian and we kind of highlight the history of Appalachia. This is an anti-Zionist Appalachia podcast, because if you weren't anti-Zionist, how the fuck could you claim to be an Appalachian podcast? We don't need to go into that. That's just something that before I had a platform to complain about it, I was complaining about it all over online, and I'm happy to hear there's been some changes, but that's just know that what you're listening to now, we are anti-Zionist all the way, and you don't have to worry about that here.
Yeah. I think it's really important to name, like, for anyone who is new and might be listening to this as the relaunch, like, first episode, Zionists can fuck off. Capitalists can fuck off, fascists can fuck off, racists can fuck off. The premise of this show is that Appalachia is not backwards. We are not broken. We, like too many groups in America and across the world, have been firsthand victims of oppression, of white supremacy, of capitalism. And that is why we stand hand in hand in solidarity with our siblings, our Black siblings, our Indigenous siblings, our Palestinian siblings across the globe. And because, like, we're not fucking free until we are all free. And I think that is exactly right. That is the premise of the show. And like I was saying, you know, earlier, when I even started the show, I knew I was going to talk about all of the great work that was happening on the ground in Appalachia that I knew was happening. And like, I knew that the coal mine uprisings had happened, et cetera. But literally just doing the show has made me so much more cognizant just how deeply intertwined our fate is and our movement. I was speaking of the Reject Raytheon group. When October 7th happened and Palestine, Israel became more visible in the public eye, I think, and like more talked about in this moment in time, I still at that particular moment was in a place where I was like, I don't know enough to make a statement about this. I actually was like, I don't take a stance on global politics because I don't have the time to research global politics. So I'm not going to be someone who speaks on something I don't know about. And a friend of mine who is here in Western North Carolina brought it to my attention that the state Democratic Party had some internal stuff happening where there was a Zionist group that was trying to pass a resolution backing Israel. And this friend of mine invited me into the learning journey about Palestine. And as I researched it, the same thing happened that happened when I first started this podcast, where it was just like, oh, fuck, like I have to have a stance on this if I care about Appalachians. I have to have a stance on this if I care about people, if I care about, like, if I claim to be anti-capitalist, this is at the center of the issue. If I claim to be anti-fascist, this is at the center of the issue. It's all at the center. Because, like, I ended up making a video series about it, and I was going to make one reel, and I think I ended up making, like, 6 or 7, because it was just impossible to put it all in a minute and a half. But they just closed down last year the paper mill that is in the center of Canton, North Carolina, which is in the county where I live. There was the largest employer in Canton, North Carolina, that closed it down last year. And just a few years ago, they started the process of instituting and building a new Raytheon manufacturing plant just at the edge of Buncombe County. Buncombe County is looked at in Western North Carolina, part of Appalachia in particular, as like the liberal mecca of the rural Appalachia part of the state. And Buncombe County is where Asheville is. And so it's majority Democrat county commissioners. Raytheon came in and said, hey, we want to build a war manufacturing plant right here on the edge of the French Broad River, which already has tons of issues with pollution, et cetera. How about y'all give us, I don't know, a few million dollars to help us make this possible? Do it for the jobs, right? So then here we are at jobs, the center of capitalism, economic disenfranchisement, which fuels like what we were talking about with the trauma of people like not being able to have the time to even consider other people's issues because they're just trying to fight for survival. So here we have jobs. We lose one of the biggest employers in the area. Raytheon comes in and says, we'll give you jobs. Just let us build a plant here. And then the majority Democratic commission says, yeah, we'll give you our local taxpayer dollars, not even like United States of America taxpayer dollars. We'll give you Buncombe County taxpayer dollars. We'll give you North Carolina taxpayer dollars to build the bombs that get used overseas to kill Palestinian children. And then Appalachians have to justify it because they know that it's paying their bills, right? And so like it just, it's impossible. I feel like I'm in the Matrix sometimes where I'm just like, it's impossible to unsee it all because it's so interconnected that you can't pull one thread without the rest of them starting to unravel too.
And that's, I think, something when you were speaking about that really, I mean, I know this is a podcast. We are not influencers. That's not our topic, right? But a thing right now on social media that really has me fucking just steamed is the whole conversation around influencers and speaking up about Palestine. It really started around October 7th. I mean, immediately after it all happened, it was immediately like, you know, hey, you need to say something. Just like when Ukraine happened, just like 9/11, just like anything, any social movement, people who are famous are going to say something because they're still fucking people. Well, now we're in a new age where random people who could be living on your street post one video, go viral, and now they're a household name.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, and people see them every day, and all of a sudden 5 million people know what they had for breakfast, you know? And there was this one creator on TikTok, and I've actually liked him so far. I mean, I don't anymore, but his name is like Mario something, right? He's on TikTok, and he's in the military. That's very well known. He's just like a funny guy, just posts funny memes about dating, about life, all that kind of, not memes, but like, you know, little skits or whatever the fuck they do on TikTok. And I've been following him for quite a while, and he's funny. He good jokes, really relatable, usually seems to be on the right side of things a lot. Like when anything comes up about like trans issues or anything like that, like there's no red flags there, right? There wasn't really any red flags. And I guess this is where it started. Was, I'm sure you guys heard of Coffee Revolution that's on social media right now, where it's like hashtag Coffee Revolution your town. And it's literally a way to get grassroots movements in small towns to realize, hey, I'm not alone, right? And with that also started was like, hey, this is taking off. So you can go on TikTok, search hashtag Coffee Revolution Canton, North Carolina. Or Canton, or North Carolina, or Rope, like, you know, anywhere that's in a vicinity of you. And yes, and you're going to get a hashtag that other people have used where you could reach out and be like, oh my God, you live here and you feel this way too. Like, this is crazy, right? Which I love. With that movement, people were like, well, shit, if we can do this with Coffee Revolution, why don't we start going to influencers' pages whose videos get hundreds of millions of views? And in the comment section, just start talking about Palestine. Like, just turn there. And what they did was, the movement was to target big creators on TikTok who haven't said anything, negative or positive, have stayed completely silent on the whole thing, go into their comments and just fucking talk it up. It started with that Michaela makeup chick. Everybody went in the comments were like, you know who'd look really good in that shade? Bassan. You know who would look really good with that hairstyle? Pletsia. Like, that's what it was. It was a way to get those words and those things in the algorithm because they're in the comments. And now this video that gets millions and millions and millions of views of people who may not or may know what they're talking about in the comments, seeing it, right? Sorry, this is drug out. So now we get to the foreword where, like, it's almost like a two-week thing. They pick a major creator and, okay, flood the fucking comments. And for 2 weeks or whatever it is, they, every fucking video that creator posts is comments full of people talking about Palestine, right? And the latest target was Elise Myers, who, you know, everybody loves Elise
Myers. Oh, yeah.
Elise Myers hasn't said a fucking word about it. She's a mom from Nebraska. You know, nobody expects her to, but everybody's kind of like, well, why hasn't she? You know, that's not my words. I'm just telling the story. So she was targeted and her comments were turned into Palestine comments all over. I don't follow her that closely. She's too much of a Taylor Swift fan for me, but I know that I heard through the grapevine that she recently had a baby this year, and I guess that baby's had a lot of health issues. Mm-hmm. And this week, I think it was like Sunday or Monday, she essentially said, like, I am being threatened and bullied off the internet, so I'm closing my account and I won't be posting. I have to take care of my family. And, you know, there are allegations that people in those comments that were talking about Palestine were like talking about like hurting her kid or hopes that her kid doesn't get any better or blah, 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 blah. Like, this is the reason your kid is sick, you know, all that kind of stuff. When really, in actuality, I checked those comment sections and I'm pretty sure the only thing I ever saw about kids was like, hey, at least you get to hold your kid today. Hundreds or tens of thousands of mothers in Palestine don't get to. Like, it was comments like that, which I completely understand. That can be hard to hear, especially when your kid is sick. I, knock on wood, have never had to live through that, but I can only imagine. There could have been DMs, so I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying that. But what it did was it sparked an outrage. Mm-hmm. Through influencers. And influencers are now taking on these videos, just talking about how fucking dare you take us commoners who are just influencers and try to hold us to a level where we must speak on something that we don't know anything about. And this Mario guy went in his typical fashion of, like, you know, over the top, overzealous, like loud, whatnot. And he was just saying, like, who the fuck am I to talk about something like this? I'm not Muslim. I'm not Palestinian. I'm not Israeli. It has nothing to do with me. And I'm not educated. So what the fuck do they need me to talk about it for? And it blew up. And the creators that have been saying something stitched the shit out of it. He has since deleted the video, posted an apology video saying that he didn't mean for it to come off the way that it came off and yada, yada, yada. But the fact is, we live in a day and age where podcasts like this and random people who live on your street that have a viral video now have a platform to talk about things that fucking matter. Mm-hmm. And even everybody on this podcast, mm-hmm, I think I could safely say we all live in poverty. None of us live in wealth. None of us live in excess. We all live paycheck to paycheck and have our very tough struggles. Without this type of platform, we wouldn't be able to talk about this with other people who are working an 18-hour shift and pop the podcast on in the background to get through. Like, it is not only a duty, it should be a blatant fucking requirement that if you're going to have a platform, I don't care how big or small, you preach it. I know I said this in the group chat because, like, this is how I feel about myself. I should have been a preacher because I will preach the gospel anywhere and anywhere as loud as possible to anyone who will fucking listen. And for me, the gospel is exactly what you said. Anti-capitalism, anti-colonization, like all of that stuff. And sorry to go off on this, but what you were talking about just, like, really made me think about it. And it's like, I can't understand how anybody could speak for other people to hear and not be talking about this, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that I only bring this up because I just want to say I am so fucking proud of you for saying, like, I knew nothing and now I know a lot and it's very fucking obvious because I've been studying genocide through every degree that I've earned and Palestine has always been one of those random stories that I post on Instagram 5 years ago that people are like, what the fuck is this crazy bitch talking about? And I'm like, free fucking Palestine! Like, this is fucking colonialism! Like,
Something happened when I was pregnant with Ryder, and unfortunately, I don't remember which carpet bombing incident it was because there's been so many, but I was hysterical for like a week or two, like absolutely out of my mind hysterical. And every person who saw me like that and I like asked me why told me that I was just hormonal. Did you not see the picture of the dead child I showed you?
Like literally not even a year ago, I remember I posted something and I posted it because my partner works for Amazon, right? Amazon's not a great company, but if you're going to take their money, take their fucking money, right? Love him. He's amazing. And we do what we have to do, right? So any shit talking I can do on Amazon, I do it as loudly and proudly as I can because I make sure people understand that like, this is not okay and we don't support this, right? So anything I can post publicly about Amazon, I will. And about a year ago, Amazon was like building the cloud that the Israeli government and IOF were using. And I posted it because anything I can, I post it just so he can see it and I can, you know, whatever, but also that everybody else can see it. And I remember posting that and so many questions like, what does it matter? Like, what's wrong with that? Like, everybody has a cloud. What's the problem? And it was like, this was a year ago that people had no idea. This has been 75 years in the making, nearly 76. This has been talked about by the first prime minister of Israel in the 1930s. Like, it's not a secret. This is ongoing. And the gaslighting that is happening over all the propaganda, but also social media about like, this is an October problem. This happened in October. Like, no, it didn't.
Honest to God, do they know how Google works? But do they know how Google works?
Like, but information suppression is also like so real. And like,
it super is. But at the same time, all you have to do is Google Israel and Palestine, and you're going to get articles from before.
Well, and then you have people like who are on these major platforms, like Sierra is saying, like who use their major platforms to either miseducate or make personal statements that are presented as factual, like political, you know, propaganda, and or people who just choose not to make a statement. And like, these are, so like I have knocked on so many doors with people who have said to me exactly what I thought, right? Like, I don't know enough. I'm too stupid. I've literally, like, people have literally said, like, I'm not smart enough to even like try to learn about those things, right? So like, because folks have been so gaslit, like you said, like into believing that you have to be a white collar kind of person to understand those things, right? Like, you need to have a college.
It's so offensive that they literally have gone ahead and they're like, these people are so stupid that they won't even know how to Google this. So we're going to tell the world that this started on October 7th.
They don't think we're so stupid. They think they're working so hard enough to.
I don't know how more people aren't angry about the gaslighting. And Sierra and I talk about this. How insulted we are. We're just like, are you serious, motherfucker? You think I'm stupid enough to not be able to Google, did this start on October 7th? Like, but that's really what they're truly doing. They're going ahead and they're presenting things that we have already debunked before they came out.
Yeah.
And they're still presenting them to us as fact. And do some people go with it? Absolutely. But the vast majority of us are not. And they're continuing to do it. And that to me, every single time, like with Kate Middleton, they're just spitting in our faces. They are spitting in our faces and calling us stupid bitches. And we're out here going, no, the stitching on the sweater is wrong. No. But it's so offensive. They truly think that we're that stupid that they can do these things in front of our faces.
They don't even think.
24/7 and we'll just not believe it.
I think that. You're right, it is insulting, but I don't even think that they think that we're that stupid. They think that they have enough control that they can predict our behavior because they are trying to control our behavior. Like, I think they literally...
Well, that's emotional ignorance there for me. That is, they are doubting our emotional intelligence.
Well, they're traumatizing... That's like they're... Ignorant. Well, they're like, oh, we're traumatizing them so much, there's no way that they're gonna have the capacity to go into and research all of this. Like, it makes me think of, like, specifically, like, I have been getting into it, I've been sharing the screenshots with y'all, with, like, white, retired liberals who are like, you better fucking vote for Bernie or the world's gonna burn, or Biden. happy.
Honestly, at this point in time, either when Bernie said we can't call this a genocide or a Holocaust.
I know. Well, Bernie too, but the liberals who are saying we have to vote for Biden, I guess with that, I'm going to eat the other half of this gummy because clearly I need it at this point. But like, and I've been getting into it because they just believe everything that comes out of the White House press
I'm offended for them too. I'm offended for the ones who are buying into the propaganda.
Like the government has, like they truly think that American democracy is democracy and that our government is like this, like trick because they don't, most of them genuinely don't know that this is also a literal fucking corporation. Like that we live in a country that was established by shareholders for the purpose of making a profit for wealthy Europeans. And like, they genuinely don't have that deep understanding. And so they're like, oh no, American democracy, it is exactly what they have told me that it is. I can believe what comes out of the government. And then like, you know, Biden will go in to say, like, I've literally, as folks have been saying, you have to vote for Biden. They've been like, oh, well, like he's done so much good stuff for labor. And I'm like, do you not fucking remember when he signed off to override the fucking railroad strikes? Like, do you, has that disappeared from your head? Like, have you forgotten all of the times that he has put his name down for the Mountain Valley Pipeline as you were talking about climate crisis? Like, so these are things that people genuinely, and it's like you said, it's there on Google. They could go look up like Biden climate, you know, but it's, they are just looking at the White House propaganda and being like, this is truth. This is the whole picture. Why would the American government lie to me?
The liberal cult to me is absolutely comparative to the level of commitment that you find in the MAGA cult. I might even say further than, because they are supporting a genocide right now because Joe Biden said it's okay to. And the MAGA people are supporting a genocide despite the fact that Joe Biden said it's okay to. You know what I mean? You flip that around, you put Donald Trump in office, and those liberals will suddenly turn against this genocide so fast because it's not about doing the right thing. It's about being the right political party color for them. Like the white guilt kind of thing, I almost feel like, you know what I mean? Like they can say they're trying to do the right thing, but they don't have to go so far as to make themselves uncomfortable and do the right thing.
Well, and I would even say that is also successfully traumatizing them, right? Like they have not actually healed the ways in which white supremacy has hurt them. They are literally acting from a place of like, I need to be a good person. And that is so much fear. Like that is so much trauma. And that's what white supremacy and capitalism and all this stuff does to you. So like even the liberals with all of their money and all of their privilege, if they're retired, all of this, like they are still, they have not, I feel bad for most of them because they actually are so clouded by the trauma that they haven't unpacked about the ways in which they actually, like they think they're winning, right? Like they truly, that's the guilt, right? Like they're like, oh, I've got the best case scenario in this. Like I'm getting out scot-free. And it's like, my friend, you don't even know that you are living a path that was assigned to you by whiteness. And like, you have been beating yourself up with shame your whole fucking life because you haven't been a good enough white person. Like, these are the things, like, I could just...
No, something that I talked about, I don't know if I talked about it on the last episode, but I've talked about it so much, is like, I have the best metaphor, analogy, or whatever, I assume metaphor, like, I am not liberal, clearly. I'm clearly not conservative. I hate them equally. But I will say, and this is going to lead into something, so just bear with me. I am far more terrified of Democrats than I will ever be of Republicans. One, I will acknowledge the fact that the Republicans have won since the Warren Court, which was, you know, the late 60s, early 70s. After the Warren Court, that's when FedSoc was founded. And that's where American government judicially has started to move conservative. I'm not saying they're not dangerous. FedSoc has literally controlled our country in under 30 years, and anything legally that happens in this country, policy to law to judicial decisions, go through FedSoc. we can talk about FedSoc another time. But the point of the matter is what I'm about to say is like 1,000% a belief that I have that the Democratic Party is far more terrifying than the Republican Party will ever be. Because I was in law school in 2020. I was in a tort reform webinar on a Saturday morning when all of a sudden, all of us in our little Zoom law school Zoom room just started hearing sirens and horns and whistles. And we were like, yo, what the fuck is that? Our professor stopped what we were doing because we were in the middle of essentially a hearing, a mock hearing. And he's like, hold on, guys. And he was like, somebody unmuted and was like, Joe Biden won the presidency. Because remember, we were all waiting because we didn't know, because it wasn't. It was so close. They had to do recounts. It took a few weeks for us to find out who won the 2020 election. And Washington, D.C. literally went nuts. Like, the sounds that we were hearing out the windows were people celebrating. And I had never been more terrified in my entire life. And neither have I ever been so angry second to Trump being elected. Because the fact that people were celebrating Joe fucking Biden was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, this is the chance that you get to see a man who's literally spent his entire life in politics and has had no problem voicing his very racist white supremacist views loudly and proudly, and has held office because of it for such a long time. He has been a vice president. He has been a senator. He has been so many things. And it's just like, who could look at Joe fucking Biden and be like, oh, thank God. Like, and these people were legit. When I tell you, the next part that was so disgusting was literally during 2020, they painted Black Lives Matter and the city renamed it Black Lives Matter Plaza. So if you're ever in DC near the Capitol and near the White House, between those two places, Black Lives Matter Plaza is there. It's still written, as far as I know, to this day, Black Lives Matter in big yellow letters with black outline. It's there. It was a huge thing. That fucking Saturday night, Black Lives Matter Plaza was turned into essentially an outdoor nightclub. And everybody was out there drinking and celebrating and dancing and doing all this horse shit when I'm literally fucking in tears and fuming because people I knew that were there, I was like, dude, how are you celebrating this, right? And this one girl, who of course was going to be a prosecutor, and I still can't stand her to this day, was like, listen, we know he's not perfect, but we can celebrate not having Donald Trump today and get back to work tomorrow. And I was like, one, you've never done a day of work in your life, capitalistically or activistically. Number two, that's never going to fucking happen. Because, and here's where my fun little metaphor comes in. If you see a shepherd with a field of sheep and there's a wolf walking around his fence, you would assume that he's preparing, right? He's got his livestock guards, dogs. He's got his guns. He knows there's a wolf, and he is fucking ready to protect his sheep. But if you have a shepherd with some sheep in a field, and there's a sheep running loose outside the fence, is he going to be carrying a gun or on his best or waiting for something to attack his sheep? No, of course not. He's going to welcome that sheep in, and he's going to be like, hey, I know you're not mine, and I know you may not be perfect because I see that you've been out in the wild for a while, but I'm going to bring you in, and I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to trust you with my flock. And he does that because he doesn't realize that it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. So then you aren't even on the outskirts of being prepared to attack when that wolf takes off the sheep's costume and attacks your entire fucking flock. And that is the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is loud, homophobic, racist, white supremacist. They are loud and fucking proud about it, and they don't shut the fuck up about it. So when Donald Trump was president, every fucking day was a new scandal, right? And I'm not saying they weren't warranted, but I'm just saying we had a whole fucking hearing about documents in Donald Trump's gold bathroom, and I probably will guarantee you most people listening to this don't remember that the same thing happened to Joe Biden while he was in office. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't make national news. It wasn't talked about. Am I saying either of them are right? No. What I'm saying is, when a Republican is in office, we are on fucking guard. The media, the neoliberals that run this country, on fucking guard and ready to do damage control and ready to change the narrative to show like how fucking terrible these people are. And as soon as we have Democrats in office, the exact fucking opposite happens. We make excuses. We let it go. We praise them for doing goddamn bare minimum, if even that. And we just turn our fucking back. Exhibit A, AO goddamn C. That stupid, stupid, stupid human. So it's just like, we're at a point, and this is so awkward to say because it's not as inhumane as it sounds, but like, the fact that this entire genocide happened in an election year and carried over to an election year, I think is going to be very, very vital to the downfall of what we know is this country. And I am so fucking here for it. And I am so fucking lucky because, as my partner and I talk about often, where would you go if there was an apocalypse and it's the Blue Ridge goddamn mountains? Because I'd have every resource, every climate, and I am too far away from anybody to care about coming to find me. So
they ain't gonna find us out there.
Yeah.
Just like when they're looking for my dad and my mom in that manhunt. I told the cops they ain't gonna find them out in the woods.
Good luck. But no, so I don't want to, I'm sorry to keep ranting. I don't mean to be going on these like long
rants. Actually, I have so much I can add on to everything you just said.
You know, please, tell me.
Okay. So I would like to circle back around to this whole Joe Biden, Donald Trump thing here real quick. I would like to say, with this being an election year, do I vote? Yes, I do vote, which I know sounds kind of stupid considering what my political beliefs are, which is voting isn't real. But I do it out of protest for every minority person that I know. Every time I cast a ballot and I can put someone else on it, that's me saying to the federal government, no, absolutely not. Like, I think anyone from Sierra would make a better president to, you know, writing in, one time I made the mistake of writing in Bernie Sanders. But like, things like that, those are political statements. I've even done to the point aware of with local government, the boy's dad became the judge of elections because I wrote his name in as the only person I trusted to do it, and he ended up winning. But I do vote, and I think that this is a great time for a third party to take off. If anything, I think that this is a good time to point out, I think more and more people are seeing that both parties are owned by the same person, that we really are operating within a one-party system. The right strips away our rights, and the left promises to give them back if we vote for them, but they never give them back, because Joe Biden could bypass Congress to send money to Israel, but he can't bypass Congress to go ahead and codify Roe v. Wade so that we can have access to abortion. Bullshit. But if they don't have the threat of bodily autonomy, why would we vote for a Democrat? Why? Because especially us out here, why would we do that? Because they don't give a shit about us at all. So they have to go ahead, they have to strip away everything. They don't care otherwise. So when we go ahead and we look at that, and we look at the cult-like mentality, when Donald Trump went ahead and did his whole Muslim ban, when all the protests were happening for that, the number of liberals who came out, but with signs that were like, fuck you, Donald Trump, and not, no, we support our Muslim brothers and sisters, this isn't okay. Astounding. They had huge numbers then. Unlike the beginning of this genocide, we're getting the numbers now, but it took them like a month. At the beginning of this, you didn't see those people. The first several protests I went to, I was a white person. I was the white person, and everyone else was Arabic. I have my kids and stuff with me too, so they, if they're not people, I don't know. And but like that was what it was, and it's a word, the liberals. And the same people who held, you know, fuck you, Donald Trump, for doing this, you goddamn Islamophobic son of a bitch signs, are now validating it. Like, Joe Biden wasn't the right-hand man of a dude committing genocide in Afghanistan via drone during his vice presidency. And it's the same people. And it's only, they came out, and it made it very clear that they came out in those moments because, not for the Muslim ban, not to support their Muslim brothers and sisters, absolutely not. Because then by now, they should be able to empathize with them a little bit more than allowing a genocide against their people. But it was against Donald Trump. That's it. They were able to be turned to the point where they didn't care about anything socially that was happening, as long as they got to make a smart-ass sign and scream at Donald Trump. Now, I love making smart-ass signs and screaming at Joe Biden. Catch me outside the White House any day, starting the fuck Joe Biden chant. Any fucking day of the week, I've got a million videos for you of me doing it. But I put in action behind fuck Joe Biden. And it's fuck Joe Biden, it's fuck Donald Trump, it's fuck anybody supporting this, which means fuck AOC, fuck Bernie Sanders, sure as fuck, fuck my governor, Josh Shapiro, and fucking Fetterman. Fetterman can suck a dick. Man, his AIPAC was his main donor. And that man ran on one of the most leftist platforms. He had national coverage. He had a huge following thanks to TikTok. And now he's running around calling TikTok dangerous. And he got elected because of TikToks.
Of course they all are, because they have to. Because when you take AIPAC money, that's a fucking contract of selling your goddamn soul. I can't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't even think it's a matter of, like, honestly, let's be so for real. I would think that one of them would put human decency above their career. I don't think it's even about saving a career. I think it goes much deeper than that. You can expect from me conspiracy theory after fucking conspiracy theory.
But I am here. This is now a full blown conspiracy podcast, because when I tell you I can go deep on the, because I've just been holding back on the podcast because I'm like, are the people ready? Can the people handle it?
Are the people ready?
I'm gonna dump some Middle Eastern conspiracy theories on you too, because I have so many friends over there that tell me things that, like, because I'll go compare notes and be like, guys, what actually happened over there in your history books? Because I'm getting this over here. And they're like, oh no, we already knew that, girl. And I'm like, oh, the Nazis got on the boats and went down. Okay, got it. You already knew that. That's why you guys are saying you're fighting Nazis, because you already know.
Mm-hmm.
No, and
it's also
like this whole fucking TikTok ban, this whole fucking AIPAC shit. The reality of the situation is, and like, I don't know if you guys saw this or not. I saw it like shortly before we got on the podcast. So did you guys see, I think it was yesterday, the Irish prime minister was over here and like spoke about Joe Biden and shit. Yeah, guess who resigned today? The Irish prime minister suddenly and unprovokedly resigned from being prime minister of Ireland. Why do you think that could be?
Yeah, it's never about the fucking career thing. Again, do you want me to go down the Epstein, Maxwell, Israel rabbit hole? Because it's there. And I often ask myself, where do these Palestinian children who go missing go?
No,
because
that's what I'm saying.
There's so much that they can do to ruin people. And they put in these stupid ass situations because they are just average people getting elected. Who the fuck is John Fetterman? Who is John Fetterman to be deciding whether or not children get to live or die in Palestine? Who is he other than some dude who pulled a gun on a black man in his community when he was a fucking mayor before?
No, and I mean, the point of the matter is like, the prime minister at this point hasn't put out like a reason for resignation, but how much do you want to fucking bet that his whole family and his life after the stunt pulling in front of Joe Biden are now on the line?
It's not careers, it's lives. It's not careers. And I don't even think it'd be a threat of, I'm going to sound so insane, but it's okay. Crazy hot scale. I think that they're genuinely out here threatening to do horrible things to their families. Like, look at what they're threatening to do.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
Their families. Yeah. They're not going to say, I'm going to kill your daughter. No, that'd be too simple.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing, it's the same people who are carving the Star of David, which, how dare they spit all over Judaism like that, carving the Star of David into the back of Palestinians.
Yeah.
It's the same people.
The whole TikTok ban isn't even about, like, everybody's like, oh, it's because it's too much pro-Palestine propaganda. Like, you know, they want to push the propaganda and they can't. That is the reason, but the reason isn't even that. The reason is because it's owned by a country that we don't have control over. If TikTok was right now owned by the same company with the same language going on, the same percentage of pro-Palestine like content, and it was owned by a Frenchman or a German or a British man, we wouldn't fucking give a shit, because we know that we have the ties to say, hey man, you gotta pull the plug on this and we'll write you a check. Just make sure it happens quickly and make sure that you deny it until the day you fucking die, or we will mutilate your entire family. And like, they can't do that to China because China's like, try me, bitch. And like, they're never going to do what the United States says to do. They're just not going to. So it is about the pro-Palestine thing. It really is. But that isn't the reason. The reason is because if the United States doesn't have control, it has nothing. It's a weak-ass bitch that has nothing. So if we don't get control over a platform that is changing how people are voting literally within 72 hours of the polls opening, what's stopping the downfall? Nothing.
Well, and just to bring that like full circle back to the whole like having a space where we talk about these things and people with platforms talking about these things, like then I, as an organizer, went from thinking I needed to change one election's outcome to thinking that I needed to change a fucking culture. And that is because we are fighting not to reuse evangelical language, because I mean it in a totally different way, but we are fighting a cultural war, right? Controlling the narrative, controlling our history, who we believe we are, how strong we believe we are, the ancestors that we think we can pull on, the things that we believe our people have overcome, and the intersectionality that we're able to recognize and then pull on. That is so, like, having control over that is control over everything else, right? Because then it's like, oh, we can invent it's a matrix. We can paint reality into whatever we want it to be. We can make people believe that whatever it is that we want them to believe they are. And like, we get to tell people actually who they are, where they come from, what their
history. That's what happened after Blair Mountain, though. That's
exactly.
When you go ahead, you look into what they went ahead and handed the education system over to Rockefeller, because he said, dumb workers make better workers.
Exactly.
I get so, this is the thing that pisses me off the most, because I want self-sustainability, but I also want inclusivity. And that means that it has to be safe. And they went ahead and they made it this place that wasn't safe, because it used to be diverse. It used to have, we used to have a flavorful culture. We don't believe things normal, just plain old white people believe. You go out there, we've got all kinds of folklore that normal people like that would be like out and about wouldn't have. We had something more that was more enriched, more communal, more diverse. And they stripped that away intentionally with the education system. They pulled people of color out of there. They made it more dangerous for them to be there. They indoctrinated them, because you have, and if you tell somebody who is at the bottom of the barrel that there's someone they can be better than,
exactly,
human natures are going to climb on top of them. And one day we can talk about policing in Washington, D.C., because Sierra knows I can go all into the classism that has been established in D.C. so that they actually have minorities policing each other just so that they can say they're a member of a different class.
Exactly.
So they went ahead and they stripped that away from us and our solidarity and our sense of that. And they indoctrinated us to hate people who are different than us, convinced us that they were doing things to us that we weren't, that they weren't, that our life sucks because they have things that they're doing. And then they turn around and they say to them, well, look at them. They hate you.
Exactly.
And we lose that sense of solidarity, because solidarity in that capacity scares the shit out of them, because everybody has a role. And sometimes direct action and direct aid is, to me, one of the most efficient tools to do that. And I think Appalachia is an area where the culture is direct action, direct aid. We do things for people when we have nothing. I always think about like the story in the Bible about like the woman who gave, like, she had like 2 cents or whatever the heck it was back then. And she gave that. And the rich people were like, ha. And Jesus was like, no, she literally gave more than you, because like, it's all she had. That to me is Appalachia. Truly. Mm-hmm. And
that Appalachia is the home of mutual aid, and nobody can convince me any different.
Because no, it's what
I was bringing up, like the barbecue chicken in our hometown. When somebody died, you knew somebody was showing up at your front door with a barbecue fundraiser that they were going to sell on Saturday morning along 75, and you got to pull off, buy your barbecue chicken, and it was going to buy Deborah her chemotherapy, or Bonnie's barn burnt down. We're going to rebuild that. Like,
we would raise money to rebuild stuff before the insurance guy could come out to look at it.
Yep.
And it was just because you've been so wildly inconvenienced by this that when that money rolls in, I'm so happy for you, bask in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it would be, you wouldn't know Bonnie. You wouldn't know Bonnie who needed chemo when you bought the chicken. You would just see a sign and you'd go, well, damn, I guess we're having chicken tonight.
Yep. Every fucking time.
Yep. And I get like going to the controlling the culture and the narrative, Appalachia was so beyond the control of the nation state that they literally had to suppress it with all of their might. And then TikTok now is becoming a platform where people are using it to amplify truth, to speak truth to power in a way that Meta often doesn't allow them to. And as a result, like you were exactly saying, Sierra, like that control, they have to have the control because controlling the culture is everything, which is why it's so fucking important that we are here, that there are platforms like this that exist, that there are people who are willing to speak up and say, listen, like the truth is more complex. There is more to it. And to make it accessible to people in a way that's like people who are in the situation that I was in October, right? Like people who feel like I want to do the right thing, but I don't know enough, or people who like are just everyday fucking people. And like to be able to see other everyday fucking people talking about this shit who aren't like lobbyists, who aren't like advocacy experts, or you're a lawyer, but other lawyers.
I don't want to get into the whole public defense in Appalachia thing, but something I wanted to say as you were talking about that, like, it just made me think, like, I am going to brag about myself a little bit. My clients love me. Like, my clients, I have had my own cases. I have my first two jury trials coming up. I'm on a high-profile case, which is, you know, I have done a lot of different cases. And my clients love me. They've given out my number to other people in the jail to get from a different public defender. Like, and I'm not saying that to, like, bag on anything, but like I take my job very seriously and I do a lot for my clients. And the reason I say that is when you're talking about solidarity and realizing that we're normal people, I would happily say 98% of the clients that love me are staunch MAGA Republicans. Staunch MAGA Republicans. And once we sit down and we start talking, that's something that my office like will make fun of me for, is like when I go to visit a client, usually it's like, you know, 15-20 minutes, I'll be there for 3 or 4 hours, because not only do I want to hear everything you have to say and let you feel heard, but also like you're gonna trust me and I'm gonna trust you, and in order to do that, we've got to be fucking real with each other. And I go in and I'm real with these people, and I've got 3 very simple rules, and as long as you follow them, I will be the best attorney you've ever had. And my first fucking rule is I'm going to believe you before I believe anybody else. So don't fucking lose it. Because once you lose that, if I find out that you hide something from me or you lie to me about something, you're going to have a really hard fucking time getting out of this cell. So just be fucking upfront. I don't judge you. I don't think poorly on you. I don't look at you any differently. In fact, the more you tell me, the more I want to help you. So something that you were saying about like using TikTok and how like Meta doesn't allow it. And it's like, do you notice that no other country has come after Meta or Twitter because they're American owned? Like no other country has done that. And the reason is because the one thing that's keeping this country from revolting entirely is class solidarity.
Yeah.
It's because every person who's been assassinated in the last 100 years has been done so. I mean, sure, further back, but I mean, in modern times, the last 100 years, wasn't assassinated for anything until they started talking about class solidarity. You've got Malcolm X, you've got Fred Hampton, you've got Stokely Carmichael, you've got Martin Luther King Jr. Like, everybody in the Civil Revolution wasn't fucking assassinated because they wanted black and white people to be equal. It's because they had the audacity to say, hey, black and white poor people, we're the same. And TikTok does such a good job of showing, like, I'm sure you guys have seen it where it's like, you know, oh, you grew up in a black household if, and then all the comments are like, oh my God, I'm not black, but that same thing happened to me. And it's like, I always take the opportunity. It's like, oh, if you grew up in an Asian household, this, you know, you wash your Ziploc bags. Or if you grew up in a Mexican household, you reuse your plastic jugs. And it's like, no, it's not your ethnicity that's solidarity. Like, it's not the ethnicity.
It's because you're poor. It's because
you're fucking poor. It's not where you live. It's not your community. It's because you're poor, because we're all poor. And the things we saw on TV weren't real life. And the one thing that, again, I won't get too far into it, but what you were talking about, who I hope really hears our podcast, and I'm going to sound like this huge conservative apologist. I'm not. I swear to God, I will fight with the best of them. But I want the right-wing extremists who love conspiracy theories, who fall down the rabbit holes like us, to realize dude, these bitches are just me.
Like, let me take you into Wonderland, little baby Alice's. Like, let's literally go.
These are like the exact opposite of people in real life that I would agree with, but they walk out of that jail cell and we have something in common. We're both poor. We both struggle. And I fought to save you. And now you get to do the same for your community. And it's just like, when you're in a position to have that binding ability between two parties, I have fucking ACAB tattooed on my thigh. Like, they, do you know how many of my clients love that? And yet they all vote completely differently from me. Why do we agree on that and not who we vote for? Why is that? It's not a hard concept. And this right here, us, and the reason, like, I reached out to you about doing this, like, hey, this might be crazy, but I think I have an idea, is because it is an election year. And people still believe in voting and they vote. And I support that every which way. But for people to hear that us crazy fucking leftist anarchists who are burning shit down and protests and getting yelled at by the MAGA Republicans believe the same conspiracy theories because we know they're true and would rather listen to you than listen to NPR on a Tuesday afternoon in election year. Like, I would rather sit down with you and hear what we have in common and just show you how much the same we are. It's revolutionary. It's revolutionary. It's necessary. And okay, I'm off my soapbox. Soapbox. I'm off of it. This is just everything you said. I was like, this is why.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I'll use the term redneck instead of Appalachian given the context of the podcast. But I think that we are such, it's funny because of like what people think about us, you know, but I think that we're such an integral part of the concept of revolution in America and they don't get it. And that is why they've turned us so much against the outside world and the outside world against us. Because when you go in there, you take someone home, it's a culture shock. When I left home, it was true shock. Yeah.
And I moved 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, you did. I don't know how. It's insane. And but they did it because historically, too, look what happens when anybody like us joins a movement. Because, like I said, everybody has a role, and we love direct action, direct aid, but we also love direct action. And there will come a point in time where standing up and fighting back will be a necessary part. There's never been a revolution in history where no one ever had to do that. Or we wouldn't be in the boat we're in. It's not that everybody before us was just too stupid to politely ask them to stop or to trick them into signing a paper that they're suddenly going to feel obligated to listen to. Look at the ICJ. The situation is putting on display that every concept that these people had about right and wrong and how things would go if they just voted the right way or did the right thing or supported the right person is bullshit. None of it's real. And so we all, you know, whoever could find it could tune into the hearings, but it meant nothing as far as saving lives. Yeah. People are still dying at the same rate because there's no form of enforcement.
Performance.
One day they're going to realize that we're the enforcement. I need people to realize that we're the enforcement because we take care of us. And we take care of us means it is them versus us. And then you got the class traitors in between who go ahead and throw on those stupid fucking uniforms and grab those goddamn badges. But it's really otherwise us and them. And that means, in my head, I'm waiting for the day that I see people storm the wall to bring aid. Because people are getting that mad. I'm seeing people online talking like, can we directly do something? I know that there have been larger influencers and things like that have actually gone ahead and raised money. So fuck these people who aren't saying anything. Because there are people who have raised money and gotten their asses over there and stood up there trying to get the aid in. And I'm waiting for the day that happens. I'm waiting for the day that militias wake up and they realize how fucked all of this is. And they grab their shit and they go out for the right fucking reason for once. Not because they want to see little brown kids drown in barbed wire in the fucking river, but because they know what the fuck the government is doing to us is fucking wrong. They, at the bare minimum, people need to start realizing that we are being worked into early graves, living horrible, shitty quality of lives over here to fund this bullshit in the Middle East. We fund everything for Israel from education down to like keeping their housing affordable. And And we're dying over here. And intentionally, they don't give us free healthcare and things like that because, well, then the people who aren't contributing to the economic system that is Israel are useless. They can go ahead and they can die off in the fucking streets for all they care because they're not able to contribute. And people need to at least be mad about that. They need to be mad that they're taking their boys from here and their women. But when they do a damn draft, which I'm expecting, I'm waiting.
Oh, yeah.
Like when they do that, maybe then people will go, not my boys, we're not doing this. And maybe then they'll grab their shit and they'll go back out. But as I said earlier, there needs to come a day where we're like, fuck this shit. Get your guns, boys. We're going to the war machine factories. Yeah. Like, it has to happen. And there's one group of people that I, let's be so for real, they don't police small towns and they don't push to for a fucking reason. They're scared. They've always been scared. And there's a reason you should be, because if you come out of the city waving a gun yelling, they're going to shoot you and be fine. If those fuckers go out to the middle of somewhere and knock on the wrong door, they're going to die. And odds are Buddy's going to get away with it. Like, because we have all these great rules about it, right? Because they go ahead and they don't bother with us. We're just here to work and be stupid in their eyes. And it comes back to how stupid do you think we are? I'm insulted. Because I also don't know. I don't give a damn really about your IQ. But you better be one of the most emotionally intelligent people I've ever fucking met. You need to get yourself to that level. And the emotional intelligence of rednecks, of Appalachians, is unreal. It is unmatched. The number of people that I have talked to that don't know how to spell and thus are ashamed of how stupid they feel are some of the most emotionally intelligent people I have ever met in my life. And that is the intelligence that matters. That is the intelligence that is revolutionary at the top of the list of importance. Yep. Like, you have to have emotional intelligence, because then you can look at a situation and you can't be fooled, because you can say, no, but that still ain't right. That ain't right.
Yep.
And if we get enough of us to say that ain't right, and then we get enough of us to do the things that we've historically done, then, I mean, history says things shift. And we can also politically cause a huge shift in America. If you can flip, Appalachia would also be the easiest place to flip third party.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It'd be the easiest place to start all of that, because we can go in and it's community. It's just go, we can go door to door. We can talk to each other. You can be someone locally that you know and respect, and just run as an independent. We don't need to be assigning other shit to us. We can just be independent and we can go ahead. We can do that. And we can show everyone our emotional intelligence and our empathy and our community and our desire to do better and be better by going ahead and buying into this whole democratic process of bullshit, because they've gone and forgotten about us out there anyhow. They ain't watching. They don't give a shit what we're doing.
There was an article this week. I feel like it was my local newspaper, but I know on Instagram, I don't know if you guys follow WV Holler. I love them. They share so much amazing information. Follow them immediately. They're great. They shared it too, so it might have been a bigger newspaper, but they're pretty close to me, so maybe not. I don't remember, but you guys may have seen it. It was just talking about the fact that only 21% of legislative seats are ever held by someone from a rural working class, not area, rural area, and a working class background.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about it like that, like, only 21% of the votes that go through at any level are our voice. We don't have representation in legislation. We just don't. Like, the poor and the rural poor don't have it. They do not have representation in legislation. And that's why policy goes the way it goes. And that's why they keep the control that they keep. Because red people in the South and in Appalachia and in the rural areas get a bad, like, the bad rap of being stupid and voting against their own interests. But the reality of the situation is the Republican Party is just smart enough to talk about their interests like they know what they're talking about. The Democrats don't even fucking bother.
Yeah.
They don't bother talking about their interests. The Republicans do because they're not, they're just not completely fucking moronic to the point where they just know to talk about it and then they won't do anything about it. But at least we're talking about it. And when you don't have anybody else in that position that looks like you, sounds like you, thinks like you, and lived like you, you're going to vote for the person that's at least talking about something you care about. It's not rocket science why Appalachia and the South are predominantly voting red. It's because they're the only people willing to talk about the issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also, like, the actual majority of people in rural areas just don't vote. And especially that's true in Appalachia. And so to say, like, the majority of Appalachians are conservative is just not true. The majority of Appalachians do not believe in this fuck show.
Like, apolitical.
Yeah. Like,
apolitical. I believe they're probably independent, if not registered at all.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they have no, I wouldn't call it no political interest, but no.
They don't see their political interests represented by this fake democracy.
On the scale, I don't consider myself a leftist. Here's the scale. I'm like over here somewhere. I'm not on it. I don't want to participate with it because I have beliefs that are over here. And I have beliefs that are over here because I see it more like a circle.
I was just about to say, see it as a circle. And when you go far enough left, you end up coming back to like the small government, right? And like people start to get you confused. Like they're like, wait, like I literally, like the liberals in my town, because I came up through the Democratic Party, like that's how I came through my political awakening. So most of the people like in my political social sphere locally are like now those retired white liberals with a capital E establishment, you know, flag outside of their residents. And so they literally are like, oh my God, you're a Trumper now. Like you are a right-wing extremist because I'm so far left that I call the Democratic Party out. I talk about how gun control is actually something that's been used to disarm marginalized and vulnerable groups at the hand of the military state. And then they're like, you don't believe in gun control? Like you're not voting for Biden? Oh my God,
I don't believe in gun control because I'm not racist.
Exactly. And they're like, clearly the only other option is a right-wing extremist. So that's what you are. And I absolutely see the spectrum as a circle where it's like, no, I think we're all floating along somewhere. And I think we need more permission to break out of this binary that we inherited from white supremacy.